All right, so law school. Am I right? You're trying to cram so much information into your
Yeah,
brain.
it's a lot, yeah.
It never stops. And especially like if you're into intellectual
And
property,
especially IP.
I mean, it's a fascinating area,
Yeah.
but it's dense.
Yeah.
That's why we're doing this deep dive today. We're
Yeah.
tackling a case that's like the poster child for how IP law, actually plays out in the real world.
Yeah.
Apple versus Samsung.
This is one everyone knows, even if they aren't in law.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone remembers those headlines. Epic showdown between like the biggest tech giants on the planet.
Absolutely.
But we're going beyond just the headlines.
Way beyond.
Right, because this case is not just some, dusty legal precedent. This is about design,
Yeah.
innovation, competition, like stuff that matters right now. And it's going to matter even more as technology keeps evolving.
Couldn't agree more. And what's really cool about this case is that it covers so many different aspects of IP law.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about design patents, utility patents, trade dress.
So, like the whole IP playbook.
Pretty much.
Okay, so let's set the scene. 2011, Apple, like at the top of their game.
Oh, yeah. The iPhone was huge.
Huge. Suddenly, they file this massive lawsuit in California, and it's aimed right at Samsung. So, what set Apple off? Like, what was the core of their complaint?
Well, Apple was basically saying, hey, Samsung's Galaxy devices.
Right, those were pretty popular.
They were. And Apple felt they looked a little too familiar, like it borrowed a little too much inspiration from the iPhone.
No, interesting. So they're saying Samsung copied the design, the tech, the whole look and feel.
Exactly. And that, they argued, infringed on all sorts of IP rights that Apple held.
Wow.
Design patents that protected the way the iPhone looked, utility patents that covered the cool things the iPhone could do, and even trade dress, which is like the iPhone's overall brand identity, like how it presents itself to the world.
So Apple felt like Samsung had stepped on their toes, like in every way possible.
Yeah, pretty much. But it's important to remember, Samsung wasn't just sitting there taking it.
Oh, right. They fought back.
Oh, yeah. They filed counterclaims of their own against Apple.
So it was a full-on legal brawl.
Absolutely.
And then, boom, 2012, that jury verdict comes in, and it's like a bomb going off in the tech world.
Yeah.
Apple wins over $1 billion in damages. It was insane.
Huge. It made everyone sit up and take notice.
Like, what did that say about intellectual property back then? Did it change anything?
Oh, I think it definitely made a statement. It showed how much IP was worth, how powerful those legal protections could be, especially in a field as competitive as technology.
Right.
I mean, $1 billion, that's not small
No,
change.
not at all.
Now, of course, if that amount got adjusted later on through appeals and further court proceedings, it wasn't the final word. But that initial verdict, it really sent shockwaves.
Yeah, it did. It showed how seriously the courts were taking these issues.
Exactly.
So you've mentioned these terms, design patent, utility patent, a few times. I think it'd be helpful to unpack those a bit.
Okay.
Because I know for a lot of us law students, like we're still getting our heads around all these different types of IP.
Totally.
So let's use Apple versus Samsung as a real-world example. What exactly were those different patents protecting?
Okay, so design patents.
Yeah.
Think about the iPhone's appearance, its aesthetics, how it looks.
Like the actual design.
Exactly. Things like its rectangular shape, the rounded corners, the way the app icons are laid out on the screen in a grid pattern, all of that is protected by design
This is
patents.
like purely about the visual appeal.
Pretty much. It's about the unique visual impression the product makes.
Okay, got it. And then utility patents, how are those different?
Utility patents are more about how something works, its functionality.
Oh, okay.
So with the iPhone, Apple had utility patents on features like the bounce back effect you see when you scroll to the end of a page,
Oh, yeah, I know that.
and that tap to zoom gesture. Those are examples of things protected by utility patents.
One's about the look, the other's about how it works.
That's a great way to put it.
Okay, I'm getting it now. But this case didn't end there, did it?
No way.
It went all the way to the Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court.
So, what was the issue that was so big, so important, that it landed in front of the highest court in the land?
The big question was about damages. Specifically, how do you calculate damages when a design patent is infringed, but it's only one part of a larger product?
Oh, okay, that is tricky.
Really tricky. So think about a smartphone. It has tons of parts, right?
Oh, yeah, lots of components.
And if one company infringes a design patent on just one of those parts, like, say, those rounded corners we talked about,
right,
should the damages be based on the entire profit from selling the whole phone? Or should it be based just on the value of that one infringing part, the rounded corners in this case?
I can see how that gets complicated really fast.
Right. And the financial implications for companies involved in these kinds of disputes are enormous.
Absolutely.
Like, are you liable for the whole enchilada or just a small piece of it?
That's a big difference.
Huge difference. And the Supreme Court ultimately came up with something called the Article of Manufacture Test to tackle this problem.
Oh, the famous Article of Manufacture Test.
Basically, what they said is this. Damages for design patent infringement shouldn't automatically default to the total profits of the entire product.
Okay.
Instead, they said, you need to focus on the value of the specific article of manufacture that's actually infringing the design patent.
Right.
Now, that could be the entire product, or it could just be one component, like that rounded corner. It depends. The key is to figure out which part the patented design is really attached to.
That makes sense. It's about isolating the specific thing that's actually causing the infringement. Not letting a patent on one tiny part snowball into this massive penalty based on the whole product.
Exactly.
Could you give us an example, though, to help illustrate this, like in a real-world scenario?
Sure. Let's say there's a furniture company, and they have a design patent on a really cool, unique armrest for a chair.
Okay, fancy armrest.
Now, if another company comes along and copies that armrest design exactly, puts it on their own chairs.
Oh.
What the Supreme Court is saying is, the damages shouldn't be based on the total money made from selling the entire chair. It should be tied to the value of that armrest itself, the article of manufacture in this case.
Because that's the specific thing that was copied.
Right. The design patent is only for that armrest, that component, not the whole chair.
That makes a lot more sense now. It's all about pinpointing the source of the infringement. So we've talked about design patents, utility patents, damages. But there's another big piece of this Apple versus Samsung saga, and that has to do with this concept of a causal nexus.
Oh, yeah.
And specifically this whole issue of a preliminary injunction. Can you walk us through that part of the case?
Okay, so this part of the case focused on a specific utility patent that Apple had. It was patent number 604.
204, got it.
And this patent covered a unified search interface on a phone.
Unified search? What's that?
You know how on your phone you can type something into a search bar and it'll pull up results from like your apps, your contacts, the web, all in one place?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I use that all the time.
That's a unified search interface. And Apple had a patent on a specific way of implementing that.
Interesting.
Now, Apple claimed that Samsung's Galaxy Nexus phone, which was a really popular model at the time, was using their patented unified search technology.
Okay, so they're back in court.
Exactly. And this time, Apple was asking for a preliminary injunction.
And that's like a temporary stop order, right?
Exactly. They wanted the court to stop Samsung from selling the Galaxy Nexus, at least while the overall patent case was still being decided.
Because they felt that the infringement was hurting them right then and there.
Yeah. They argued that they were suffering irreparable harm.
Okay. Did it work?
Well, at first, yes. A lower court actually granted Apple that preliminary injunction.
Wow.
But then the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals, which handles a lot of patent cases, they stepped in and overturned that decision.
Why? What happened?
The key issue was this thing called causal nexus.
Ah, there it is. Causal nexus. I've heard that phrase, but honestly, I'm still a little fuzzy on what it actually means.
Okay, so basically, the Federal Circuit was saying that Apple, to get that injunction, to prove they were being irreparably harmed, they had to show a direct link between the infringement of that specific 604 patent, the unified search, and actual consumer demand for the Galaxy Nexus phone.
So it's not enough to just say, hey, they're using our patented tech, so we're losing money.
Nope.
You've got to prove that people are buying the Galaxy Nexus
because
of that specific feature, the unified search, that's being infringed.
Exactly. It had to be a driving factor in why people were choosing that phone.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's not just about whether the tech is being used, but whether that specific tech is actually what's making the product successful.
You got it. And the court made a very clear distinction here.
Did they really?
Oh, yeah. They said that Apple had to prove that consumers were choosing the Galaxy Nexus because it had that exact apparatus, that specific implementation of unified search that was covered by the 604 patent.
Right.
Not just because it could do searches in general, not even because it had some other kind of unified search. It had to be that specific one.
Okay. Do you remember how the court actually phrased that?
Yeah, they said, and I quote, Apple must show that consumers buy the Galaxy Nexus because it is equipped with the apparatus claimed in the 604 patent, not because it can search in general, and not even because it has unified search.
Wow, that's pretty clear cut.
Oh, yeah, they were laying down the law on this one.
And it shows how important that causal nexus really is. So having a cool feature is one thing, but proving that that feature is actually what's driving sales, that's a whole other ballgame.
Absolutely. It's a much higher bar.
Okay. Now, there was one other aspect to this case we haven't touched on yet, and that's trade dress. Apple also claimed that Samsung had copied the overall look and feel of the iPhone, right?
Yeah, they did.
So what happened with those arguments?
Well, Apple was basically saying that the way Samsung's phones looked was so similar to the iPhone that it could confuse consumers.
And that's the heart of trade dress infringement, right?
Yeah.
Causing that confusion in the marketplace.
Exactly. But the Federal Circuit ultimately, they didn't buy it. They rejected those trade dress claims.
Really? Why? What was their reasoning?
They cited something called the functionality doctrine.
Functionality doctrine. Okay, break that down for me.
Basically, this doctrine says that you can't use trade dress to protect features of a product that are, you know, essential to how the product works or to its purpose.
Okay.
So the court looked at the things Apple was pointing to, like the rectangular shape of the phone, the rounded corners, the flat front surface.
Right.
And they said, look, these are all functional elements of the smartphone. Like rounded corners make the phone more comfortable to hold. A flat surface is practical.
Right.
And the court felt that if they let Apple protect these basic functional things as trade dress, they would actually stifle competition. Because then no other company could design a phone that was similarly user-friendly and, you know, easy to hold.
It would be like giving Apple a monopoly on just the basic idea of what a smartphone should look like.
Right. And the law is very wary of that. It wants to encourage competition to let different companies come up with their own solutions and designs.
Okay, so functional features are off limits when it comes to trade dress. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So we've covered a lot of ground here. This case was massive. It was complex.
For sure.
But if we had to distill it down, what are the absolute key takeaways from Apple versus Samsung? What do law students really need to walk away understanding?
Okay, I think there are a few big ones. First, that causal nexus requirement for preliminary injunctions in patent cases.
Yeah, that was a big one.
It's a huge deal. You can't just point to infringement and say, stop them. You've got to prove that the infringing feature is actually driving consumer demand, that it's causing real immediate harm.
And that's a really high bar to clear.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, what else?
Second, the Supreme Court's article of manufacture test.
Right, for design patent damages.
That really changed the game when it comes to calculating damages, especially in cases involving multi-component products.
Yeah, it made things a lot more specific, a lot more focused.
Exactly.
Anything else?
This case also highlighted the importance of understanding consumer behavior in IP disputes. You know, you can't just argue about patents and trademarks in a vacuum. You have to be able to connect those legal arguments to what's actually happening in the marketplace, to how consumers are making their decisions.
Oh, yeah. Like, what are people actually responding to? Why are they choosing one product over another?
Exactly. You've got to have that real-world understanding.
So you're saying IP law isn't just about the legal technicalities. It's about the intersection of law, technology, and, like, consumer psychology.
Absolutely. It's all connected.
Yeah.
And lastly, I think Apple versus Samsung really showcased that fundamental tension that exists in IP law.
That tension between
protecting innovation, rewarding creativity, but also fostering competition, allowing the market to evolve.
Right. Because if you protect one company too much, you might stifle the whole industry.
Exactly. And it's a constant balancing act.
So, big picture, what does this case mean for the future of IP law? How has it shaped the legal landscape?
Well, I think Apple versus Samsung is a landmark case. It's going to be cited for years to come.
Yep.
It really clarified the rules of the game when it comes to things like design patent damages and preliminary injunctions. And it made companies a lot more aware of how important it is to have a solid IP strategy, especially if they're operating in a fast-moving field like technology.
Right, because the stakes are high.
Oh, yeah.
So, as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with something to think about, especially for those of you still in law school, trying to figure out where you fit in this whole legal world.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the principles we've talked about today, the causal nexus, the article of manufacture test, this idea of balancing innovation and competition. And then look at the technologies that are emerging right now.
Like artificial intelligence.
Exactly. AI, VR, AR, biotech, all these crazy innovations. How are these principles going to apply in those fields?
Good question.
Because the products are getting more complex, the lines between design and functionality are blurring. And the legal battles, I mean, they're going to be epic.
Oh, yeah.
So think about it. How do we protect IP in a world where technology is evolving faster than ever before? How do we make sure the law keeps pace? This deep dive into Apple versus Samsung, it's a starting point, a way to understand the key legal battles that have shaped the field. But the story's not over. It's just getting started.
For sure.
So keep learning, keep exploring, and we'll see you next time on the Deep Dive.
Sounds good.